everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We are live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland and streaming live at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Today, New York Times journalist and author Abby Ellen will join us to discuss her experiences with being overweight as a child and her book, Teenage Wasteland, A Former Fat Kid Weighs In on Living Large, Losing Weight, and How Parents Can and Can't Help. You're welcome to call in at 845-624-1300 with any questions or comments for Abby. And Teenage Wasteland, that's W-A-I-S-T-L-A-N-D. Teenagers, from fluctuating hormones, pressures to fit in, dating, driving, that's hard enough. Add dealing with eating and weight issues and constant humiliation, and it could be a recipe for disaster for everyone. According to the Institute of Medicine of the National Academies, childhood obesity has more than doubled for adolescents ages 12 to 19, and 9 million kids over the age of 6 are considered obese. Abby, welcome to Health in 30. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. I want to tell you, I absolutely love this book.
Oh, thank you.
And it's a book for everyone. It's not for anyone specifically who's overweight or who has a child who's overweight, but everyone, because walking down the street, someone will eventually and most likely see overweight people, and this will give them an insight into the feelings that these people are struggling with every single day and how devastating it must be for them, because there's no simple solution to losing weight. And what they go through and the stories that you tell, and how when you yourself were at camp, and I know you referred to them as fat camps, and I thought to myself, I was wondering if maybe if you made that up for the book, but I Googled it, and I can't believe that that's what they're called.
Oh, yeah, fat camps. Oh, yeah. There was actually just an MTV special called Fat Camp about a camp. Yeah, and a summer at a camp. So, absolutely.
What's the very first moment that you thought to yourself or you believed that you were overweight?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the first time I believed I was overweight was when my grandmother said to me, "You got tremendous." That was sort of a clue. So that's when I discovered that, I mean, that's when I thought, you know what, this might be a problem. I didn't know whose problem it was, though, whether it was mine or hers, but that's when it really hit me.
Now, I know you talk about when you were supposed to go visit her in Florida and she had made a comment to you. That obviously stuck with you. Did you forgive her eventually for that?
I did. What happened is that I used to spend every Christmas or, you know, December vacation with my grandmother who lived in Florida. And when I was 12, I had gained weight. And she said to me, as incentive, as sort of a motivation, she said, "Look, you can't come visit me unless you lose weight, you know." And I didn't lose weight, so I didn't go to visit her. And she later felt bad, and I went down for April vacation, you know, but it was really... It was bad. Yeah, it was not. Because you figure that you're supposed to have unconditional love from these people. And, you know, when there's a condition on it, it doesn't make you feel very good. So.
Now, as a very young child, though, you weren't overweight. Is that right?
No, as a young child, I was a gymnast, and I still look like a gymnast. And I'm muscular, and I was never skinny, and I will never be skinny. But and even at my heaviest, I was maybe 20 pounds heavier than I would have liked to have been, which was not obese at all. I'm short. I'm only about 5'2" and a half, so every pound kind of matters, but I was never obese. But, you know, according to my grandmother and in my family, that was sort of this horrible thing, you know, this failure. This fat was this moral failure, as so many people think.
Did you start comparing yourself to others? Did you look at other girls and say, "Oh gosh, look how thin they are"? Did you ever look in the mirror and see yourself heavy, or it really didn't bother you until somebody had said something?
No, it bothered me. I mean, I knew I was gaining weight, and I could feel my clothes getting bigger. You know, and I don't know. I mean, getting tighter. I don't know to this day if it was just puberty, you know, setting in, or if I just liked to eat and I kind of picked out. I don't know. It's interesting. I thought about it a lot when I was, I guess, 12 or 11 or 12, I had gone to a private school, and I was in school every day until 5:30 in the afternoon. And when I left, I was in public school, and all of a sudden I was done with school at 2:30. And I ate the rest of the time. I remember just eating. I had all this extra time to fill. And I think that probably contributed. You know, I just ate. So
What did you eat? Was it just regular foods, or was it all snacks and junks and that high fructose stuff?
Snacks. I love sugar. Love sugar.
Okay.
Ice cream, jelly beans, and pizza. I love pizza. I mean, I'm really very simple. now I eat sushi. But junk food. And, you know, we would have it in the house until my mother would then, you know, hide the food. I have an older sister and a younger brother, and my brother could eat whatever he wanted, and so she would hide food for him, and then I would see him eating it and, you know, say, hey, where did he get the devil dogs? And, you know, it would be this big mystery when it was in the front of the car. So, anyway, that's kind of what happened.
So how did you come to the conclusion that you needed to go to a quote-unquote fat camp? Which, what other word can you use besides that? Because that just sounds so...
I know. Because, you know, it's funny, my editor, yeah, we'd wanted to call the book something like Fat Camp Confidential or something, and I thought, well, I don't know, but it's, we could call it a weight loss camp. I have a friend who called it diet camp, but that's not right, because it's not diet camp, because it's really more about exercise, about exercise. It occurred to me because I remember vividly, I just turned 16, I was on a boat, we went on some family cruise to the Caribbean, and my grandfather had died and left us some money, and I just decided I was going to go to fat camp because I was not able to take it off, you know, that extra weight off at home by myself. I just couldn't, for a variety of reasons. And so I did. I went to fat camp, and I was the thinnest one there. Honestly, I was so thin, and in comparison. And I lost my weight. I was there 9 weeks, and then the next year I worked at a camp as a counselor, and then I went to college and gained weight. I got to be the heaviest I ever was. And then after that, I went back, and then I worked with them as a counselor for the next 4 years.
Did you obsess about your weight at all, or was it something that just kind of came and went that you didn't think about it much?
I thought about it all the time. It's so funny because, you know, I don't weigh myself now. I go to the doctor, and I won't weigh myself. It's just not part my gig, my world. I just don't think, for me, it's not healthy. And I know that there are so many theories about this, that you should weigh yourself. Weighing yourself every day is a really good way to regulate your weight. And it is. It's also a really great way to make yourself crazy. And I chose the latter. I'd rather, you know, not be crazy and obsess over it. And I think trying on clothes also works. But I absolutely obsessed about my weight. I spent probably all of college thinking about my weight and worrying about it.
Did anybody ever tell you that it really didn't matter, that they thought of you as a person of your beliefs and your heart and your values, or that you were valuable to society regardless of the weight? Did anybody ask you what you loved and what your hobbies were, your interests? I mean, did anybody ever look beyond the weight, or someone else?
These are such good questions. I'll tell you the truth. And remember, I was not obese. I mean, really, 15, 20 pounds. My friends today will say to me, you know, from high school, you were never that fat, Abby. I don't think of you as fat. And I get enraged because my whole identity and I define myself as a fat person. And it was because in my family, my two grandmothers, whom I was actually very close to, my father's mother and my mother's mother, my mother's mother in Florida was the one who said, you know, you have to be thin. Girls have to be thin and beautiful. The world judges on first appearances, which... unfortunately, the world does. My father's mother in Connecticut said, you know,
Abby?
Absolutely right.
Oh, you're sorry. You're kind of going in and out a little bit. Hello? Abby? I think we may have lost her. Abby? It's connected. Maybe she's on a cell phone. I don't hear anything. Okay, well... hello? Abby? Nope, I think she got cut off. Oh, well, this technology of ours is not working so great. Actually, on her end, I think probably the cell phone. She'll call back in. So the book, again, is called Teenage Wasteland, and it's WAISTLAND, and it's her experiences with being overweight, and she also visited and spoke to a lot of kids. When we get her back on the line, she'll go into what the kids were feeling. We're going to just take a quick traffic break, and we'll be right back. This is WRCR.
And what's going on with Rockland County Roads? The answer with Metro Traffic.
it looks like we're getting rid of a problem on the Palisades Parkway. This report is brought to you by Maimonides Medical Center. That would be the stalled car on the Palisades north end near exit 10th and Nanuet. Still big problems, though, on the New York State Thruway in both directions. Southbound, you're slow from north of exit 13 to south of exit 12. We're stalled. They're still in their center lane. On the Thruway north end, it's still solid from exit 10 to 13. And police are wrapping up an accident reported on the Thruway north end, north of exit 16 in Harriman. Taking a live look for you at the Tappan Zee Bridge. Still absolutely crawling if you're Rockland bound on the Tap, but all lanes are open. No problems on the southbound side. This summer, avoid serious illness on your vacation by visiting the Maimonides Travel Medicine Team first. For more information, check out HealthyTips2006.com. I'm Susie Sterone for Metro Traffic on WRCR, first with Rockland Traffic.
Weather.
In Rockland County, as we go through this evening, there is the chance of a shower or a thunderstorm, but otherwise partly cloudy. Overnight, partly to mostly cloudy skies, and there could be a shower or a thunderstorm with lows between 53 and 58. Then a big improvement for the weekend. In fact, we'll see bright sunshine with a few fair weather clouds on Saturday. It'll be windy and highs between 68 and 73. Then for tomorrow night, mostly clear skies and lows from 50 to 55 degrees, upper 40s north and west, and then a brilliantly sunny day on Sunday. Low humidity, highs in the mid and upper 70s, and Monday and Tuesday, sunshine continues, and highs 75 to 80. For Radio Rockland 1300, this is meteorologist Mark Hammack.
Up-to-the-minute weather information is always available on the AM 1300 website. Day or night, when you want the weather, check our website at WRCR.com.
Abby, are you there? Abby?
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you. Great. Thanks.
I'm sorry. I know exactly where I was, but you might have more questions.
Okay. Well, I think you were talking about your grandparents.
Yeah, I was. I was talking about just the difference between one person in your life saying it's important to be a better person,
right,
and the other person saying it's important to look a certain way. And unfortunately, I think the looking a certain way is what this culture places value on. And there's a lot of pressure, especially if you're young, to look a certain way, you know? So that's what I think, unfortunately, is the messages you get.
Right. And you talked to a lot of kids in the different camps that they were involved in. I have to tell you, two stories that really hit hard were a story about the pizza when a mom ordered the pizza for her and her thin son, and then the heavier son wasn't allowed to eat it. That was really...
Yeah.
Heart-wrenching,
yes,
to say the least. And then the other, if you could tell that story about the Dixie cream donuts, that story is unbelievable. And I'm thinking if parents, I'm not by any means blaming parents because there's obviously so many different reasons why people are overweight, but if parents are so degrading and humiliating to their kids, what does that mean? It's almost then saying, well, society, it's expected that society will do the same.
Right.
But if you could do that, tell about that Dixie Creams donut story.
And that was exactly the problem. Again, it has to start in the home. You have to accept your kids. You have to give them unconditional love. I really believe that, for them to go out into the world with a semblance of self-esteem. But this one story was about this girl who was very obese, and as a kid would go out, I guess she was an adolescent, she was driving, and in the afternoon she would go to Krispy Kreme and she would buy all of these donuts. And she would pick out and eat them and then come home for dinner. And eat, you know, the small amount that her parents had given her for her so-called diet. Well, at some point her mother found out that she was doing this. So one day she came home and everybody was eating dinner and there was just one little plate on the table for her, and there was nothing on it, and she said, "What is this?" And the mother brought out a container of donuts, an entire box of donuts, and said, "You want donuts? Here's your donuts. Eat them now." And she made her eat the donuts in front of her entire family. And, this girl was just horrified, traumatized, you know. It still affects her today. I mean, it's just this horrible story, you know, that's not exactly the most supportive kind of response.
Right. It's so devastating. I mean, there's so many issues that people go through on a daily basis, and then And then to include weight into that and then have people who are supposed to love you no matter what degrade you like that, that is just an awful thing. And I don't know what the answer is. I mean, obviously, too, there's so many reasons for overweight. There's the psychological and emotional reasons. There's medication reasons and physiological.
Absolutely. There's a million reasons. And as I like to say, you know, everybody knows, for the most part, how to lose weight. I mean, you know what you have to do. You eat not a lot, and you exercise a lot. You take in less than you put out. You know, I mean, that makes total sense. But, you know, it's not that simple. And if it were that simple, everybody would be thin, and we wouldn't be having this discussion.
Exactly.
You know? So what parents, though, the worst thing parents can do is badger and pester and harass and harangue their overweight child. Because the child knows that he or she is overweight. They don't need their parents to tell them this. They know this from their peers. They know this from watching TV. They know this from magazines. They know this. So why on earth do they need their parents to make them feel bad? They feel bad enough as it is.
Right.
And so I believe that you don't lose weight until you want to lose weight. You don't stop drinking until you want to stop drinking. You don't stop smoking. You don't do anything until you want to do that.
Right.
So, yeah.
I have an issue actually with one thing. The CDC actually has a great website, the Centers for Disease Control, and they determine obesity by your body mass index, the BMI.
Yep.
But when you think of, and actually they have a little chart where you could go and put the information in your height, your weight, your date of birth, and it comes out with your BMI to say if you are in what percentile to see if you will be, or if you're on the verge of being obese. But what happens when somebody's the same height, weight, and age, somebody's full of muscle, someone's full of fat? How can you say that's the same thing?
That's exactly right. I did a story recently for, actually it was Red Book magazine about, trying to figure out, you know, if, how you determine what you really weigh. And what I concluded was that it was testing your body fat was much more important than doing the BMI and seeing where the fat is dispersed in your body, you know, because if you have fat in your stomach, that's more, if you're apple shaped, that's more of a worry for heart disease than if it's, you know, sort of spread throughout your body. And that body fat was much more of an indication and much more of concern, because absolutely, people, you know, are very muscular, and that muscle weighs more than fat. That's just the way it is. So that you need to look at your percentage of fat, and that's would be an accurate gauge.
Right. And for those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland and streaming live online at WRCR.com. Joining us today is New York Times journalist and author Abby Ellen. She's talking about her struggle with childhood obesity and her book, Teenage Wasteland, A Former Fat Kid Weighs In on Living Large, Losing Weight, and How Parents Can and Can't Help. The number to call in is 845-624-1300, and that's Wasteland as in Wasteland, not Wasteland. The food industry, do you feel, plays a big part in the struggle for weight loss?
Yes, I do, absolutely. Although, and that's been documented in Fast Food Nation and in Super Size Me. Yeah, they're definitely, you know, the portions are much bigger in this country especially than anywhere else in the world. And we do have the whole supersize culture here as well. There's a lot of junk food. Junk food, or food that's less healthy, is cheaper to get. So if you're a poor family, then you have a problem, because it's much more difficult to get the food. But I also, and of course there's advertising to kids, which is a problem, and there's the food and the sodas and the schools and all of that. But I do also hold parents accountable, because I believe that parents have to be role models, and it has to start from day one. You know, you can't just all of a sudden, when your child is 13, say, okay, you know what, we're going to be healthy now. Because by that time, unless she's really into it, it's not going to fly. You know, she's going to rebel. And so the parent has to model the behavior they want their child to exhibit. They have to. They have to not be sitting on the couch stuffing their faces with Doritos and admonishing their child to, you know, go outside and exercise, or conversely sitting on the couch and then having their kids do it with them. You know, that doesn't work. So I do think the food industry is at fault, but I also do hold parents responsible. I do.
Right. Yeah, I think actually in your book too, you had mentioned one woman saying that she was a single mom. She's working and she doesn't have time to cook. So it was, I think, basically the fast foods, and that's how the extra pounds also are being placed upon people.
Absolutely.
and all that high fructose corn syrup too. Every time you look at ingredient, it's there, and that's just adding weight. And all the sugar sodas, which actually I know the schools now are trying to do a good thing and take those sodas out of there, but they definitely need to work on their menu, because a lot of that fried stuff is still in the schools, and that's what kids are buying and eating, and it's not helping their health at all.
That's absolutely right. And I'm glad you said that. It's not helping their health, because we really do need to look at it as a health issue and not so much an aesthetic issue. We really do, because I believe you can be, and I've written stories about this, you can be fit and fat, or fat and fit. It's possible. There are people who are technically what you would call overweight, quote-unquote, who are actually very fit, aerobic teachers and, you know, spinning teachers, all sorts of things. So I have a friend who's, God, I think she's 260 pounds, and she's low cholesterol, she's got no problem. I mean, really, it's miraculous. And she's 50, 51, I think. So, you know, it does have to be about health. And there will be people who are overweight, technically, who actually will be healthy. And if you can live like that and you're happy with it, then that's fabulous. Terrific.
I think everything is just so fast-paced. Everything is just, without thinking, everything has to be done so quickly, and eating, everybody's just kind of just rushing to eat without enjoying the meal. I actually noticed, we went to actually Italy last year, and we noticed that one major thing there is people just take their time. It's such a slow pace, but they enjoy their food, and it's not this large amount of fattening foods. They're just eating so healthy, and everything is so fresh, but they just sit and they enjoy it, and I think that's a big part of it, because just in observing the people there, everyone is just very slender. No one, I shouldn't say no one, because I'm sure there's some people, but
yeah.
What I saw, there's a lot of thin people, and I think it's because of the foods that are just more healthy, and I think they take the time to just sit down and enjoy their foods. I think everything is just so rushed here that I think
Absolutely.
That may play a part in it.
And they're not eating as big portions as we are, and they're not snacking.
Right.
And they eat bigger meals at different times of the day, you know, earlier. It's a different system. And absolutely, that's where the whole slow food movement is. And when they really are just trying to be slow about the way they eat, and boy, it's absolutely something we could learn from them. Absolutely.
What's the most thing that struck you the most when you were talking to all the people, either your own experience actually in the camp or talking to the other people that were involved in the camp? So what struck you the most, that enlightened you or inspired you in some way?
I think the thing that really it struck me the most is that, you know, nobody knows how to handle this. Nobody knows what to do. Because parents, my grandmother, she wasn't trying to be mean. She was trying to inspire me. And she thought this was incentive, you know, and I understand that. And she wasn't trying to be mean. And that's sort of what struck me, is that Buddy is struggling with this. And no one knows what the answer is. And that's because nobody is looking at it on so many different levels. It's not right to say, you can use this program and there are four easy steps and here's you're going to lose weight, or don't eat carbohydrates or only eat, you know, grapefruits. It's not like that. Different programs work for different people, and people are all different. And so that's what I think really, that's what I've always believed, and working on the book and meeting all these people really reinforced that. And it needs to be looked at on an individual case-by-case basis, the weight problem.
At the end of your book, when you were visiting your grandma, it was so, I had tears coming down my eyes, because I thought in the beginning when she was telling you about everyone had to be thin and beautiful, and she made a comment that you couldn't visit. But at the end, I said, she had to love you, and I'm sure you forgave her, and it was so sad, though, that stayed with you, and that it affected you in some way that you didn't forget.
Well, and the interesting thing about that, yeah, is she was dying of a brain tumor, and while she was dying, she was having us weigh her, because she was, in her kind of mania and stupor, she was afraid she was going to get fat, because all she was doing was lying around and not really moving. And so she would have us weigh her. And that's when I realized that, you know what, this is a deep, deep, deep issue for her. And she did. She totally had my best interest at heart. And she did what she could. She did the best she could. And, you know, 30 years later, it's okay. You know, I forgive her. And I, you know,
yeah.
She loved me. Of course she did. Absolutely.
So what would be your tips then for people listening right now? What would you say the most important things are for either parents or teenagers, or children or anyone listening? What would you say that is the most important thing for them to know?
The first thing I would say is, and as I said before, it's, you've got to role model the behavior. You have to be a role model, and that means that parents are going to have to get their own issues under control about how they feel about food and weight and their own bodies, and that's really what that means. They don't want to pass on negative behaviors to their kids, which means you don't look in the mirror and say, mommy's rear end is so big. You know, you don't do that because that's something that they pick up. The kids pick up everything. And I talked to a mother who was so worried about her five-year-old daughter's eating habits, and she was hiding food from her, and then the mother would go into the closet and eat the Doritos that she was hiding from her daughter and then hope she didn't smell like Dorito breath, you know, and kids pick up on that too. So it's important not to be really kind of hypocritical. And I don't mean be, I don't think it should be at all. Weight should not be an issue. And again, as far as aesthetics goes, it should be a health. We want to be healthy. So I don't think you should deny your child anything. But I also think you should encourage exercise and, you know, not to be sedentary and just kind of be healthy.
I want to just read a quote from your book. You say, kids need, nay, crave structure. They want to be told what to do, at least when they're young. They want their parents to be well parents, not to shame them, not to judge them, not to condemn them because of their weight, but to love them, flaws and all. I think that pretty much says it all. Abby, thank you so much for joining us. The book is called Teenage Wasteland, W-A-I-S-T-L-E-N-D. And it's available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. How else can listeners get a copy? Is there a website that they can go on?
I have my website, which is www.teenagewasteland.com.
Okay, great. Thank you so very much. I'm sorry?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Abby. Struggling with your weight, dealing with the many layers involved from the emotional to the physiological is intense. The humiliation, the bullying, the unkind words may never be forgotten. There is no formula that will erase obesity. Everyone must deal with it in their own way. They must be ready to be committed to the difficult road ahead. They need to be more dedicated than ever. They must hold their head up high because they are as valuable as anyone else. If society can look beyond the frame and see deep into their heart and focus on their goodness, maybe the road ahead of them may not be so difficult. Thank you to Abby for joining us. This has been Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300, Radio Rockland. And next week, join us as Dr. Rick Holmes from Brookings Hospital in South Dakota takes calls from you on any issues that you may have, from migraine headaches to high blood pressure to living wills. Any medical questions you'll have, he'll answer. Email me with any questions or comments, and don't forget, let me know what topics you want to hear. Go to WRCR.com, go to Friday's programming, and click on Health in 30. Stay well and see you next week. As always, Health in 30 is not to diagnose or treat. Always seek help from your healthcare professional. Have a great week.
AM 1300, WRC.